Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we've got a pretty specific mission, actually.
Yeah, we're kind of sidestepping all the big philosophical AI talk.
Right. And instead, we're going to really dig into the math, the calculus, the geometry, the stuff that actually makes machine learning work under the hood.
Exactly. We've gathered a bunch of source material, and the idea is to give you the, well, the clearest path we can find to understanding neural networks.
How they're built, and maybe more importantly, how they learn. How they're trained using optimization methods.
We want you to get a handle on things like backpropagation and, you know, why sometimes the training just fails, even when everything looks like it should work.
Okay, let's dive in. The blueprint, neural networks. What are we actually talking about mathematically?
Well, the sources start simple. It's a Wade-directed graph. Think of nodes and connections.
But the important nodes, the hidden ones, they're special, right? They're these neurons.
That's the core unit. And yeah, it all builds up from the simplest version, the perceptron.
So what does a single neuron do?
Okay, so imagine it gets signals from other neurons, its inputs. First, it calculates a weighted sum of those inputs.
So each input connection has a weight, and you multiply and add them up.
Right, plus a bias term. So that's the linear part, like $x plus b do bols.
Okay.
But then, and this is key, it pushes that sum through an activation function, $5. That result is the neuron's output signal.
And that function, $5, that's where the magic happens. It adds nonlinearity.
Exactly. Without it, the whole network, no matter how deep, would just be one big linear function. It couldn't learn complex patterns, you know, curves and boundaries in the data.
What kinds of activation functions are common? The sources mention a few.
Yeah, they cover the basics. There's the simple identity function if you need a linear layer. There's sigmoid, or the logistic function, which is useful for squashing outputs, like between 0 and 1.
Good for probabilities, maybe.
Yeah, sometimes. And then there's the really popular one, ROC-LU, rectified linear unit.
Why is that one so popular?
It's just simple and computationally fast, and works surprisingly well most of the time. So these functions, they define how the input $6 gets mapped to the output dollars, given the weights dollars. It's $6, x right, arrow, y, o, y, o, r.
Got it. So we have neurons, activation functions, weights, the whole structure. Now, the training. What's the overall goal?
Simple goal, really hard execution. You want to find the best set of weights. We call this dollars.
Best meaning?
Meaning the weights that minimize the total error. The mean loss, usually written as JXD dollars.
And that mean loss, that's just the average error over every single example in your training data.
Precisely. You calculate the sample loss for each example. That's JXX, WXDDU, comparing the network's output dollars to the actual target powers, and then average them all up.
Okay, so how do we find due dollars? It's iterative, right? Like step-by-step adjustments.
Yep. The sources lay out like 10 steps for a single weight update cycle, and the core engine driving this is backpropagation.
Okay, let's walk through that, because backpropagation sounds intimidating, but it's fundamental. Steps 1 to 4 are just running the network forward.
Right. Forward propagation. You feed in your input, $6, the signals flow through the layers, weighted sums, activation functions, until you get the final output error.
That's step 5. Calculate the error for that one example. JP, how far off were we?
Exactly. Now comes the clever part, the backward pass. Steps 6 and 7 are backpropagation.
Propagating. What exactly?
The error signal, usually called delta. You calculate how much each neuron contributed to that final error, and you pass that blame signal backward through the network, layer by layer.
Ah, okay. So you're figuring out which parts of the network messed up the most.
Kind of, yeah. And that leads to the crucial step, step 8, calculating the sample weight gradient, NABLAR-JR.
This tells us how to change the weights.
Precisely. It's the direction and magnitude of the change needed for each individual weight to reduce the error for that specific sample.
And the sources give a formula for this.
They do, and it's surprisingly elegant, actually. NABLAR-JDJ-OSANDA, ODIHAN 1/2 or not.
Okay, delta O times delta lows.
That tensor product symbol looks complicated. What does it mean in practice, like, for one weight connecting neuron Jayla to neuron Deller?
It's simpler than it looks. Think about it. To adjust the weight on that specific connection, you need two things.
Okay.
First, you need a Deller teller. That's the error signal, the blame, arriving at the downstream neuron Deller.
Right.
How much did that neuron contribute to the final mess?
Right.
Second, you need 6 Jayla, That's the signal that the upstream neuron jailer actually sent across that connection during the forward pass, its activity level.
So you multiply the blame signal at the end of the connection by the activity level that came through the connection.
Exactly. If the connection was very active, 6-JLR high, and the neuron it set into was very much to blame, delta LIO high, then that weight needs a big adjustment.
Ah, that makes intuitive sense. It efficiently pinpoints where the changes need to happen.
That's the power of backprop. So once you have that gradient...
Step 9, update the weights using gradient descent. Which brings us to the training engine itself. Right. Gradient descent, or GD. The basic idea is super simple. You want to minimize the loss function, 5W dollars. The gradient, GW dollar, points uphill towards the steepest increase.
So we go the opposite way, downhill.
Exactly. The update rule is W plus plus E's WT, WT, WW. You subtract a small step in the gradient's direction.
And that T is the learning rate.
That's the one. And choosing T is, well, it's a bit of an art, but there's math behind it, too. GD is actually a simplification of Newton's method from optimization.
How so?
Newton's method uses second derivatives, the curvature of the function, DDD dollars, to take smarter steps. But calculating that for millions of weights is just computationally massive.
Impractical.
Totally. So GD basically replaces that complex DDL over out term with a simple scalar, T dollars, the learning rate.
But picking T is tricky. The sources talk about a short step constraint. Tell them your dollars, Ella.
Yes, this is super important for you if you're actually training these things. Dollar represents the maximum curvature of your loss function, how bumpy or steep it can get.
So if the loss landscape is really rough, like lots of sharp curves.
Then a dollars is high and a dollars is small, meaning your learning rate dollars has to be small. You need to take tiny steps.
Otherwise, you overshoot the minimum, jump right over the valley.
Right. Or you just bounce around erratically or even diverge completely. If the landscape is smooth, dollars is low, $1 is large, and you can afford to take bigger steps with dollars.
Okay, makes sense. But standard GD, even with a good T, has another big problem for machine learning, right? The data size.
Oh, yeah. The data overload problem. Think about MMS'd again, 60,000 images.
To calculate the true gradient, MWFW dollar, you have to compute the sample gradient for every single one of those 60,000 images.
And then average them all together.
Just to make one single update to the weights.
Yep. If your model is huge and you need thousands of updates, forget it. It's just too slow, computationally prohibitive.
So what's the solution? This is where the stochastic part comes in.
Exactly. Stochastic gradient descent, SGD, this is what pretty much everyone uses.
How does it work?
Instead of using the true gradient calculated from the entire data set, you just use the gradient calculated from one sample.
One. That sounds incredibly noisy. Like a really bad estimate of the true direction.
It is noisy. Or, more commonly, you use a small batch of samples, a mini batch, maybe 32 or 128 samples, calculate the average gradient just over that tiny batch, and update the weights based on that.
So you're taking lots of small, noisy, approximate steps instead of one big, accurate, expensive step.
That's the idea. And the amazing thing is, mathematically, it still works. It converges towards a minimum.
No. If the direction is noisy.
Well, you need to be careful with the learning rate schedule. You can't just use a constant taller anymore, like in basic GD. The learning rates, TLRs for step dollars, have to decrease over time.
Decrease. How?
They need to satisfy two conditions, which sound a bit technical, but are quite intuitive. First, the sum of all learning rates must be infinite. Sum TN
infinity.
Infinity.
Meaning, you never stop trying.
Ow.
You always have the potential to keep moving, even if the steps get tiny. Infinite cumulative effort.
Perfect way to put it. But second, the sum of the squares of the learning rates must be finite. Sum TN2 in TIFTY2.
Okay, what does that mean?
It means the steps have to shrink fast enough. Fast enough that the cumulative effect of all that noise doesn't overwhelm the process. The variance has to be controlled, allowing the process to eventually settle down near a minimum.
So keep trying forever, but get progressively more careful about your steps. It's a balance.
Exactly. Things like harmonic learning rates, TNT dollar equals alpha N plus beta, satisfy these conditions.
Okay, quick terminology check. We're usually doing mini batch training now. An iteration is one weight update using one mini batch.
Correct.
And an epoch is when you've gone through the entire data set once.
Yep. So if your data set has NALR samples and your batch size is $7, you'll have NALR iterations in one epoch.
Perfect. Okay, so we know how to calculate gradients. Backprop, and how to update weights, even with huge data sets, SGD. But does the training always work? Is a solution always guaranteed to exist? What makes a network trainable?
Good question. Trainability basically means, does the loss function, JW dollar, actually have a minimum value dollar that the process can converge to?
And the answer depends
on What?
The network, the data.
It depends crucially on the loss function you choose. Let's compare two common scenarios.
Right.
First, square regression. Using mean squared error loss. This is pretty much always trainable. Mathematically, minimizing mean squared error is equivalent to solving a certain kind of equation, a residual equation, and that equation always has a solution. So a minimizer dollar exists.
Okay, so regression is usually safe. What about classification? That often uses logistic regression, right?
Right. Logistic regression, or LR, often uses a different kind of loss based on relative information or cross entropy, often coupled with the softmax function at the output to get probabilities.
And here?
Here, things get much trickier, and this is where our sources highlight a really fundamental, maybe even counterintuitive, result, especially for linear binary classifiers.
Okay, lay it on us.
Logistic regression is not trainable if, and only if, your dataset classes are perfectly separable by a hyperplane.
Whoa, wait, hold on. That sounds completely backward. If my data is perfectly separable, like I can draw one straight line and perfectly separate all the blue dots from all the red dots, isn't that the ideal scenario? Clean data, easy classification problem. Why would training fail then?
It seems backward, I know, but think about what the logistic loss is trying to do. It's trying to push the predicted probabilities towards zero or one, extreme certainty.
Okay.
If the data is perfectly separable by a line or hyperplane in higher dimensions, the model realizes it can always make the separation slightly sharper. It can always increase the slope of that separating line, pushing the weights towards infinity, to make the probabilities infinitesimally closer to 0 and 1.
So there's no single best line. It just keeps trying to make it steeper and steeper forever.
Exactly. The loss function doesn't have a minimum value in this case. It's unbounded below. There's no finite dollars to converge to.
So if you run gradient descent on perfectly separable data with logistic loss, what happens to the weights?
They just keep getting bigger and bigger. The sequence of dollar will diverge to infinity. It never settles down.
Wow. Okay. So for logistic regression training to actually converge to a nice finite solution, the data must be inseparable. There has to be some overlap, some ambiguity between the classes.
Yes. That geometric property of the data inseparability is actually required for the optimization problem, finding a minimum for logistic loss, to have a solution. It connects the data's geometry directly to trainability.
That is a critical insight. So assuming our problem is trainable, maybe because the data is inseparable or we're using squared loss and we're using SGD, we might still run into issues with speed or getting stuck, right?
Absolutely. Basic GD or SGD can be slow. It might crawl across flat regions of the loss surface or get trapped in shallow local minima that aren't the best overall solution.
So we need ways to speed things up or get unstuck. Accelerated methods.
Right. And the analysis of these methods often relies on a stronger condition called strong convexity.
Strong convexity. That means the loss function curves upwards everywhere, right? Not just non-negative curvature,
yeah,
but strictly positive curvature, bounded below by Fuvr.
Exactly. Molyneux D2FW, it's a nicely behaved bowl shape, which makes optimization easier.
What's the first step beyond basic GD? Momentum.
Yeah, the heavy ball method, or momentum GD, usually credited to Polyak. The idea is brilliant in its simplicity. You don't just move based on the current gradient. You also add a fraction of the previous step you took.
The update rule looks like W dollar plus WT Palumbo plus Silufwo plus WW the W. That last term is the momentum.
That's it. Silu WW dollars is the momentum term. It's like giving the optimization process inertia.
Like a heavy ball rolling downhill.
Exactly. If it hits a small bump or a flat area, its momentum carries it through, potentially escaping local minima or speeding across plateaus where the gradient is tiny.
That definitely sounds faster.
It is, often significantly. Though the strongest theoretical guarantees for Polyak momentum are mainly for simpler quadratic functions. For the complex, non-convex landscapes of deep learning, we often turn to something even more refined.
Which is?
Accelerated gradient descent, specifically Nesterov's method. NAG, Nesterov accelerated gradient.
Okay, how does Nesterov improve on basic momentum?
It's a subtle but powerful change. Instead of calculating the gradient at your current position, do dollars, and then adding momentum.
Yes.
Nesterov's method uses the momentum term first to kind of look ahead. It calculates a temporary future point, let's call it Delolar Cirque, based on the momentum. Then it calculates the gradient at that look ahead point, Delolar Cirque, and uses that gradient to make the actual update back at dollars.
Hmm. Okay. So you sort of predict where your momentum will take you, check the slope there, and then use that information to adjust your current step.
That's a great way to think about it. It's like correcting your course based on where you're about to be rather than just where you are. And this modification turns out to be incredibly effective.
How effective?
Theoretically, Nesterov's method achieves the optimal convergence rate for all strongly convex functions. It's the best you can possibly do in a certain mathematical sense for that class of problems.
Wow, so it's not just a heuristic trick. It's mathematically proven to be superior for well-behaved functions.
Precisely. And while neural network loss landscapes aren't perfectly strongly convex, these accelerated methods often provide significant practical speedups.
This whole journey from neurons to backprop, SGD, separability, and now acceleration, it really shows that getting ML to work isn't just about throwing data at a model. It's about understanding these mathematical and geometrical rules.
Absolutely. So let's quickly recap the key things for you to take away.
Okay.
Neural networks, they're weighted graphs. Training happens via backpropagation, which is just a clever way to compute the weight gradient, Nabla Jayal, essentially by multiplying error signals and activity levels.
And because data sets are huge, we can't use the true gradient. We use SGD, stochastic gradient descent, taking noisy steps based on mini batches.
Right, which works, but only if the learning rates decrease properly. Remember, some TNTN, ETN2, and 2 in CV, infinite effort, diminishing steps.
And the huge counterintuitive point, for a classification with logistic regression, the training only converges to a nice solution if the data is inseparable. Perfect separation means diverging weights.
A crucial link between data geometry and trainability. Finally, we can speed up convergence using momentum, especially Nesterov's accelerated gradient, which looks ahead before calculating the gradient step.
Understanding these details, why SGD needs a schedule, when separability is a problem, how acceleration works, that's what lets you move beyond just running code to actually diagnosing and improving your models.
Exactly. And maybe one final thought to leave you with, connecting back to SGD and strong convexity.
Okay.
Isn't it fascinating that all these proofs about SGD converging reliably or accelerated methods having optimal rates, they rely on the mean loss function 5-aller, the average overall data, being nice and smooth and maybe even strongly convex.
Right. Even though the actual function we use at each step, the sample loss or mini-batch loss, is anything but. It's noisy, bumpy, non-convex.
Exactly. It shows the incredible power of averaging and probability in this field. We establish mathematical certainty about the overall process converging despite the chaos and noise within each individual step.
How the collective average smooths out the individual messiness. That's definitely something to chew on.
Food for thought.
Well, this has been a fantastic deep dive into the real engine room of machine learning. Thanks for walking us through that.
My pleasure.
And thank you for joining us. We'll catch you on the next deep dive.